At the same time, the Magos felt the impact of a bolt round in the chest of a Fulgurite battle priestess as she hurled herself into more of the traitors on the second level, just a few meters above the Dominus's physical incarnation. Though she felt the puncture and sudden eruption in excruciating pain, to the Magos, the fatal wound registered as a series of negatively scaling victory factors, the closest to sadness the battle-programmed persona was likely to experience. Bolts rang against V's armored form, but their impacts were no distraction as V aimed at a squad of heretics that had formed a staging point on the starboard stairwell, just below the second level. From this vantage, they unleashed punishing fire across the other three sides of the atrium, forcing back Skitarii squads and driving the auxilia into the scurryways and ducts. Taking direct control of an alpha in a Skitarii squad, almost directly above the knot of enemy warriors, Exassus Tactical had the squad deploy their fragmentation grenades, while simultaneously commanding another alpha on a gallery opposite to use the distraction to regroup their heaviest weapons to a better firing position. As one cogitation thread managed this maneuver, Exassus Tactical's other semi-autonomous routines likewise created crossfires against an advance on the aft third level, precipitated a counterattack into a bloody melee from the bottom stairs of the port walls, and orchestrated a feint and encircle with a platoon of Skitarii on the third floor. Though Exassus Tactical could not literally be everywhere, at any point when V deployed this focus upon a squad or battle priest, V was able to coordinate with far greater speed and precision than any of his subordinates. V pinpointed weak points in the armor of a squad that continued to unleash devastating salvos of sonic blasts from the uppermost galleries. With this information, several disparate squads combined their fire with drastically improved effect, felling three of the augmented warriors in their following fusillade. Even lone marksmen stalking the vaults felt the momentary presence of the Magos, steadying their biological systems, prioritizing targets, and implementing redeployment commands. The connection was not one way. Exassus Tactical received continual input from the slaved Skitarii so that V could monitor casualties, fear responses and fatigue, and inload specific local data that remained out of detection of this suite of personal scanning systems. While auditory receivers registered the crack of bolts and shouts of the angry and dying, a far more elaborate battlescape played out in Vis cogitational circuits. Degrading combat capabilities of both sides registered in various hues of blue and red, conveying an almost physical need to bolster in certain places, demonstrating the ability to relent in others. The entire force was an extension of the Warskin. Exassus Tactical wielding the squads under his influence as a warrior might use their own body. Each squad was a separate limb, each soldier a digit upon it that could be turned to a particular task if need be, whether an opportune counterstrike in close combat or a timely arc rifle shot moments before the target moved out of the shooter's sight. Like the eye of a vortex, all of the activity whirled down into Exassus Tactical, and through Ver the battle for the atrium raged. The strategic necessity for the defense had been affirmed, and now all that remained was the execution of the conflict. The enemy had made no move that betrayed any objective other than the atrium floor and access to the command and mechanical decks, and although this single-mindedness made it relatively straightforward to predict their behavior, physically stopping such a determined assault was far more problematic. Chapter 7. The Cybernetica. Strobing lasfire and the echoing snarl of bolter rounds warned that the fighting was not far ahead. Flashes lit the freeze-painted walls with splashes of blue and red. Sparks of bolts descended past a high archway at the end of the passage, met by the rising beams of lasguns and the tamed lightning of arc rifles. "Quick!" said Azad, hurrying forward. He ran awkwardly, his crushed arm tied across his chest with his belt as an improvised sling. In his free hand, he carried his stub pistol, waving them on. Arc rifle in hand, Harkus ran alongside Dazi, leaving Gelser to follow. Several dead Skitarii were piled in the archway, ripped to pieces by bolt rounds as they had entered the corridor. Harkus hung back with Gelser as the two vent fighters edged forward. With an encouraging nod, Dazi beckoned them on, waving for them to crouch behind the bodies as she peered out into the chamber beyond. Gelsa leaned forward to see where they were, resting her weight on the bloody remains of a Skitarii soldier. The stairs, Azad had mentioned, turned out to be the transit atrium between the upper levels of the Acropolis and the chambers around the ante that led to the holy decks. Delving 5 stories into the casus belli, the atrium was lined with vaulted galleries, 4 open stairways ringing the walls from top to bottom. They had arrived at a landing halfway down, literally in the middle of a firefight. Traitor legionaries held the upper floors, standing at the rails and firing down at the defenders, taking shelter in the adjacent corridors and halls. White-clad bodies littered the stairs and landings, the pale stone splashed with crimson. Bullets whined into the renegades from above as duct runners sprang monkey-like between the girders of the vaults, and others fired from the atmospheric circulation hatches. Now and then, a traitor turned his weapon upwards to unleash a storm of bolts, but the nimble Armageddon veterans never remained in one place long enough to suffer the return fire.
"We can't go out into that," said Gelsa, reeling back as a bolt exploded on the walkway just in front of them.
Shards of ferrocrete spattered the corpse mound and fell onto her.
"Not yet, not yet," agreed Dazi.
She shuffled to the archway, leaned out to snap off a brace of shots, and then scuttled back to them as bolt detonations threw shrapnel from the arch and floor.
"Friends will be coming soon, friends with bigger guns."
"How soon?" demanded Harkus.
"As soon as they are woken up," said Azad. "No sooner."
"There must be some other way down," said the Inquisitor.
"Plenty," replied Azad, "but they are sealed to stop the enemy using them. The big gates are shut, and that channels them here to be killed, unless you have an override." "We can take you another way, through the vents," said Dazi.
She looked at Gelsa and shook her head sadly.
"But not you, big one."
Gelsa met Harkus's gaze and nodded.
"You should go," she said. "You don't need me anymore."
He looked disappointed, but answered with a nod of his own.
"You have delivered me to the Acropolis as we agreed. The Hyperesia will not be looking for you here."
He paused as the crack of a fragmentation grenade reverberated up the atrium, followed by an intense thunder of bolter fire.
"Thank you for your assistance so far."
Gelsa was lost for words, not quite sure how she felt. Harkus was right. She had achieved what she had set out to do, and yet it felt like she had an unfinished task to complete.
"Who are you, strange one?"
Dazi asked Harkus.
"What do you want in the command decks?"
Harkus shook his head.
"I cannot tell you."
Gelsa was about to speak up for him, to tell the others that Harkus was an Inquisitor, but she stopped herself. It was clear he did not want to share that information. More than that, for the first time since they had fled the Hyperesia, she asked herself whether she really knew what he intended.
"I can see you are a tributi," Azad said to Gelsa.
He jerked his head towards Harkus in his stolen uniform.
"He is no Skitarii. Do you trust him?"
A terrible thought cast its shadow on her. What if Harkus was with the rebels? His insistence on coming to the Acropolis seemed convenient now. Had he known about the traitor legionary's plan to launch an aerial attack? As much as his outlandish gear and attitude might make him an Inquisitor, it was equally likely he was trying to get to the holy decks to open the doors and let the renegades in. Had she been complicit in letting a heretic gain access to the holiest part of the casus belli? Her stomach knotted in apprehension, and she forced out a few words.
"I'll come with you." "It's too small," said Dazi.
Harkus walked a little way back down the corridor, gesturing for Gelsa to accompany him. She bent down to hear his whisper.
"I have to get to the Moderatus Prime to retrieve my sigil. If I can get into the command center with Dazi, I need to do it."
"I have a better idea,"
said Gelsa, thinking as quickly as she could. She had only a half-formed idea, but knew Harkus wouldn't give her the time to mull it over. She just had a bad feeling, that clumsy, organic instinct again,
and didn't want to let Harkus get away from her. There's no point in getting in there if the traitors break in and kill everybody straight after. They could even be working with the heretics. If they reach the Ante, then what's to stop the tech priests just opening the gate for them? Why not drive out the traitors first, and then get our new friends to take us in after that?
He sat back on his heels, considering this, the arc rifle across his knees. From the atrium, the sound of bolters and the crash of armored boots grew louder, signaling a renewed assault by the traitors. The Skitarii fusillades intensified in response, lighting the corridor with azure and scarlet reflections.
"You are right," said Harkus.
He stood up and checked the power cell on the arc rifle with a surprisingly practiced motion, obviously familiar with the weapon. There were so many little contradictions, it drove Gelsa mad trying to pin down who he really might be. Harkus pointed the gun at the bodies strewn across the corridor, and then to her multi-tool.
"You might want to get yourself a weapon with more range," he said.
"I don't think so."
Gelsa eyed the arc pistols and mitralocks.
"I'm Tributai, not Skitarii. I'm just as likely to blow your head off as do any good with one of those."
Harkus looked at her, frowning.
"Being Tributai does not define you, Gelsa Vingeaint," he said, stepping close. "Do not let others restrict what you can be." "I am not ashamed to be Tributai," she replied, angry at the assumption and condescension in his statement. "Without us, the Casus Belli would be an empty shell, like a corpse drained of blood. The machine god gives it spirit, but all of us together, Dulos, Hyperesia, and Skitarii, bring it to life."
"Have you never wanted something more? What if you could ascend to the ranks of the tech priests and travel closer to the machine god?"
"That's what you don't understand."
She touched the cog symbol in her forehead and then ran her fingers along the struts of her exoskeletal arm.
"I already travel in the sphere of the machine god. They gifted me these as reward for my dedication. You think the cult mechanicus despises the flesh, but the biologist teaches that even flesh is a machine, simply forged from different materials. The machine god is in our thought processes, not our limbs and organs. You disrespect that when you give me stims without my consent, without offering supplication to the spirit they have placed within me."
She stopped, shocked by her own vehemence. Harkus looked at her oddly. He seemed offended at first, and then cautious.
"I did not mean to cast aspersions on your faith, Tributai, but to compliment you on your resilience and resourcefulness."
Gelsa noted the lack of an actual apology in the explanation, and was about to iterate that point when the cough of stub pistols and a shout from Darzi drew their attention back to the atrium.
"Some help here, strange one!"
Azad called. Armored warriors were descending the steps on the opposite side of the hall, bolts and plasma blasts preceding them like a bow wave, carving apart any Skitarii caught in the fusillade. Converging arc flashes and lasbeams scoured across their armor, but they advanced into the storm heedless of any danger. The Armageddon fighters and Harkus added their fire to the defense, bullets and arc flares blazing across the divide. One of the lead giants stopped his advance and turned towards them, bolter raised. Darzi threw herself across Harkus, knocking them both flat, while Azad dived against the corpse pile. Gelsa stood transfixed as bolt rounds exploded across the bodies, detonating viscera into the corridor. A second salvo ripped a fresh sway through the corpses, shattering dead bone, tearing cold flesh. Harkus and the two tunnel fighters were pinned down behind a depleting wall of the dead. In a few more seconds, the corpses would be ripped apart, denying them the last shreds of cover. The gleam of a plasma coil drew Gelsa's eye to one of the bodies closer to her. There was a plasma caliver in the soldier's dead grip. The pulse of the energy cell called to her like the insistent blink of a warning indicator. From her position, the Space Marine was just in sight, but the corpse was in full view of the traitor. If she moved, she would step directly into the line of fire. Another staccato of wet explosions and a dismayed shout from Darzi spurred her into action. She bounded forward, covering the width of the corridor with a single caliper-assisted leap. She stooped and tore the rifle from the Skatari's grasp, and then turned, raising the weapon in one hand. A shrunken, ruddy image of the Space Marine moved back and forth in the sight along its length, appearing and disappearing as her hand wavered. Still boosted by the vestigial effects of the combat stim, Gelser tracked the course of the next bolt to erupt from the Space Marine's weapon. It slammed into the wall between her and the others, a midpoint in a continuing burst that was moving towards her. She pulled the trigger. A fist-sized sphere of blue plasma sped across the atrium and smashed into the traitor's chest, even as the next round left the muzzle of his bolt gun. The armored warrior fell back into the wall, scattering shards of molten plastron, but Gelser's attention was fixed on the spark of bolt propellant as the projectile raced towards her. It scorched past her face, the spit of propellant burning her eyes, hot air washing over her skin and the heartbeat before it slammed into the wall further down the corridor. A split second later, it detonated, spraying shards of plascrete into her arm and leaving an uneven pattern of white dots across her skin. Her ear buzzed painfully, partly muting the ongoing sounds of battle. Darzi, Azad, and Harkus rose up from their hiding place and dashed towards her. A fresh welter of bolter impacts tore into the archway where they had been, chasing them down the passageway. The two Zenagia tackled her together, driving her away from the line of fire, just an instant before the white-hot beam of a las cannon slashed into the corridor. They hit the floor hard, Harkus jumping over the tangle of their limbs to evade the incoming fire. Rolling over, Gelser half-jumped and half-crawled after the Inquisitor, her breath coming in short gasps. Darzi and Azad caught up with her, hooking their arms under hers to haul her fully to her feet. Together, the four of them fled for the shelter of a doorway a few meters further down the passage. Gelser sank to her knees in the small chamber beyond, her shoulders heaving, her leg bracing, scraping the tiled floor. Harkus stopped inside the arch doorway and peered out. He jerked back suddenly, and a bolt trail sped past the opening a second later. Gelser followed his gaze as he looked around the chamber. It was a storage space, lined with shelves on which were stacked neat piles of chamfered discs and assorted sealed cardboard boxes. Azad and Darzi performed their own quick inspection, pulling aside crates to see if there were any vents below the lowest shelf. There was nothing, only solid wall.
"At least we're safe in here, even if we can't go anywhere," said Gelser, hauling herself to her feet with the help of Harkus's outstretched arm. "If the traitors don't reach this level of the atrium," said Azad, "or break through at the outer gate and arrive from the same way we came," added Darzi.
Without spoken agreement, Harkus and Gelser backed away from the door until they reached the wall. The two Armageddon veterans stacked more boxes to create a barricade across the entrance, and then another line of crates further back that they could shelter behind.
"Don't worry, help is on its way," said Darzi. "Our tunnel kin will find us, or we can wait for the Skitari to secure the area again."
"You mentioned something else, other forces being readied," said Harkus. "How much longer until they arrive?"
"Not long, I'm sure," said Darzi. "And then the serious fighting can begin."
They waited. The sounds of battle waxed and waned along the corridor, sometimes so intense it was hard to imagine anyone from either side might survive, and at times almost falling silent as the combatants simultaneously regrouped. Each resurgence of gunfire was accompanied by indecipherable shouts, the metallic echo of binaric, and the distorted amplified war shouts of the traitors. Now and then, one of the tunnel rats would identify specific weapons, plucking a particular zip or bang or hiss from the cacophony. Judging by the smiles and little laughs they shared, it seemed to be some kind of game. Gelser had the plasma carbine resting on a crate, aimed directly towards the center of the door. The others had their weapons couched more comfortably, lacking a lockable exoskeleton to take the strain of aiming for so long.
"You would make a very good fighter, you know," said Azad. "Not so good for vent crawling, but very strong, very big." "I don't think I'm suited to it,"
said Gelsa, remembering her episode of dizziness. I prefer taking on coolant leaks to enemy fighters.
Nothing more was said, and Gelsa's thoughts began to turn, chasing themselves around her head. Without the distraction of conversation, she feared she would screw herself too tightly and lose control again.
How long have you been on the Casus Belli? She asked, trying to sound calm. Nearly 4 years, I think, said Darzi. We grew up on stories of how our ancestors fought in Hades Hive against the orcs. When the tech priests came to Acheron, we fought our way up into the Hive City to offer our blades to the Legion in return for their sacrifices for our world. A great day for us that they accepted. Your Princeps Mannheim, he is a saint on Armageddon. Did you know that?
Said Azad.
He has a holy day almost as grand as Yarik's. I did not know that, said Gelsa.
She saw confused inquiry written in Harkus's face.
How can you not have heard of Kurt Mannheim, hero of the Legio Metallica?
The Imperium is vast, and you cannot expect someone to take an interest in every war that has occurred and every hero that has arisen in 10,000 years. I know little of the troubles of Armageddon.
It was during the First War when Beast Ghazag-Kul invaded, she said.
I think you mean the Second Armageddon War, he replied.
She is right. It was the First War, when the Greenskins brought destruction to our world.
Of course, Harkus said hurriedly. Yes, it was the First War. There have only been two, yes?
Gelsa frowned at his ignorance and shook her head derisively.
The traitor Overlord von Straub ordered the Titans of the Legion into battle against impossible odds.
When she said the turncoat governor's name, Darzi and Azad made slashing motions across their throats and then spat on the floor, hatred burning in their eyes.
His soul burns in the abyss, snapped Darzi. Long may he suffer.
Mannheim obeyed, though he knew he could not win. Despite the odds, the Legio ended the profanity of many orc war engines in that battle, and even when his noble warlord, Steel Hammer, was close to destruction, he pressed into the foe and overloaded the reactor to destroy as many greenskins as possible.
Praise Mannheim! His sacrifice endures as we endure, intoned Azad. We can hope that our souls will be elevated to the Emperor upon the fires of battle, too.
Why did he obey? Harkus asked with a frown.
A flurry of bolter fire that sounded quite close had them all pointing their weapons at the door again. After several seconds, the sound relented.
Perhaps we should take another look, suggested Darzi, looking at her life partner. It would be bad to sit here waiting when we do not have to.
Azad vaulted over the crates and then dropped to his belly to slide serpent-like to the doorway. He pulled a thin rectangle of polished metal from the waistband of his trousers and held its end between a slender thumb and forefinger. He eased the mirror into the corridor, angling it for a moment to look towards the atrium. He rolled sideways and threw himself from the door moments before a bolt impacted on the frame, hurling fragments of plascrete and paint across the retreating duct runner.
Still not good,
he said, taking position once more. Though dozens of soldiers gave their lives for the Machine God, the Space Marines drove them to the lowest two levels. Occasional data bursts from the Logistari Mondaris informed Exasus Tactical that the external threat to the Acropolis had been neutralized, and no further enemy were incoming. The forces defending the main gate and upper gun batteries were thus devoid of duty, and Exasus Tactical retasked them to the atrium. Exasus Tactical lacked the ability to predict fully whether such reinforcements would be able to intervene in time. Their imminent arrival might well spur the enemy into a final attack, knowing that they fought on only for death or victory. Alternatively, if they detected fresh forces on their way, the heretic Astartes might well secure their positions and attempt to fight a more protracted engagement. Neither was a promising prospect, with the Casus Belli actively fighting to breach the citadel. While they cut down the first of the Space Marines to reach the atrium floor with a swipe of a gleaming blade, a flash of Strategos think entered Exas's tactical's mind. The leg bastions were empty. It was entirely possible that the heretic Astartes had attacked purely to divert all possible defenders to the Acropolis. Exas's tactical had not the ability nor the inclination to investigate this further, and filed the idea away into a sub-packet for Exas's non-tactical to deal with as we saw fit. The distraction was unfortunate, drawing away Exas's tactical's attention for almost a whole second. Too late, V detected a trio of Space Marines leaping from the uppermost level, their jump packs flaring as they plunged directly towards the heart of the fighting. The Magos's thought imperatives scorched through the minds of his soldiers, directing all excess firepower at the descending giants. Arc rifle fire scoured the divide in a roiling tempest, while phosphor rounds cracked white fire across the armored warriors. One of the Space Marines fell like a comet, crashing into a first-level gallery, the impact slaying half of the Skitari squad deployed at its rail. The other two controlled their descent with more bursts of jump-packed lair. A sudden change in course took one of the heretic Astartes into the remaining Corpuscari and Fulgurites, who had gathered around the Dominus as a final line of defense. The second landed directly atop Exas's tactical, the weight of impact slamming the Magos to the floor. Emergency self-preservation routines burst into life, performing a rapid triage of the immediate danger. Exas's tactical whipped a gleaming combat blade towards the Space Marine atop Viz's shell, catching the chainsword aimed at Viz's phosphor blaster. Serrated mandibles sprang from Viz's carapace and locked around the bolt pistol in the warrior's other hand, crushing it. The other Space Marine hacked his way through two Fulgurites, his chainsword trailing electricity-laced blood from the wounds. Ducking beneath the staff of another, he hacked the legs off a third and rolled underneath Exas's tactical. It was immediately obvious that the Magos was being targeted directly, a normative protocol decapitation attempt. Exas's tactical resisted the desire to dump load this cerebral context into the newer spheric archive for later restoration. The action itself would likely precipitate Viz's physical demise and the subsequent loss of the atrium. Instead, V turned those precious moments of processing into a burst of action. Taking up a tripedal stance, the Magos snapped a bladed foot up under herself, puncturing the back of the Space Marine driving the tip of a chainsword at Exas's tactical's armored underside. At the same time, we detonated the ammunition of Viz's Serpenta, sending waves of system static coursing through Viz's hardware. Despite the intense discomfort, this had the desired effect of blasting the other Space Marine from the Magos's back, sending the heretic Astartes crashing to the floor, molten flesh and armor indiscernible from each other. With all of his attention fixed upon immediate survival, the Magos had no spare output to bolster the defense. A dozen heretic Astartes had reached the first level, uncaring of the Skitari above them, determined to force their way to the ante of the command module and the gates of the torso decks. The warrior beneath the Magos continued to blast with his bolt pistol, chainsword wedged into a crack of Exas's tactical's abdominal armor. With one leg now pinned into the superhuman soldier, the Magos lacked any means to attack. If he simply left Viz's weight drop onto the Space Marine, it would only drive Viz's body onto the whirring teeth of the chainsword. A fatality imminent protocol boiled through Viz's processors and activated the Warskin disengagement routine. It was intended as a final attempt at escape, but had the effect of dropping Exas's inner body directly on top of the Space Marine. Shocked, just as Viz's attacker likely was, Exas's flailed mechadendrites, interface spikes, and grappling appendages at the heretic's ornate helm. A diamond-tipped interface plug pierced a lens and punched into the eye and brain within. The retort of the Space Marine's bolt pistol almost overloaded Exas's auditory pickups, and we felt a very real explosion of pain in Viz's upper torso. He continued to stab wildly at the heretic's facial area, scrabbling at the armored form with a flurry of propulsive limbs. Sensory input finally registered the Space Marine as deceased a few seconds later, though Exas's remained unsure which actual blow had caused this positive outcome.
Further investigation into the immediate situation was curtailed by the flood of strategic data flooding into Verth through the Noosphere. Viz consciousness expanding out through the layers of the Acropolis and beyond to the battle that raged outside the Titan, Exassus was swept away as though confronted by the touch of the Omnissiah himself. The battle din did not lessen, and in fact increased over the next few minutes. Not only did the noise intensify, it moved closer. Even Gelser could tell. She swallowed hard and wiped the sweat from her hands on her coveralls. Amid the noise she'd become accustomed to was a semi-regular pounding, like heavy footsteps on stone. It grew louder and louder, a continuing crash accompanied by furious gunfire. Beside her, Dazi and Azad shifted nervously, their own unease adding to her discomfort. The two tunnel fighters shared a glance. The thudding was definitely heading along the passage towards them. Sporadic bursts of light from the atrium cast a broad shadow along the floor, from something far larger than a normal man. Gelsa's finger trembled on the trigger, and she almost opened fire by mistake. Teeth gritted, she waited, the footsteps now just outside the door. Something armored in white and red plate stepped into view. Dazi jabbed out an elbow just before Gelsa opened fire, knocking her off aim so that the plasma bolt struck the shelves instead of the mechanical beast before them. In the next moment, Gelsa saw the construct properly. It was certainly bigger even than a space marine, its domed head almost touching the high ceiling. The freeze of the corridor was reflected in a mirrored visor face that turned towards her, independent of any movement from the rounded shoulders that flanked her barrel chest. A flame-throwing weapon pivoted over the shoulder from her spinal mount, the flicker of its ignition spark leaving spots dancing in Gelsa's vision. Heavy forearms contained the muzzles and magazines of solid shot weapons, where hands should have been. These too lifted towards her as the automaton squared its bulk towards the open doorway. A Castellan.
Identify.
The construct's voice was deep and slow. Each syllable precisely enunciated, but distorted by the synthesizer that created it. Its arm mounts tracked them with stiff movements and the whine of servos.
Faithful,
said Dazi, standing up, her pistol held out to one side.
Scan your data store.
It regarded her in silence for several seconds, and then dropped its arms to its sides.
Major Dazi Ashael. Identified.
Major? Harkus and Gelsa uttered the question at the same time, equally incredulous. Dazi frowned at them.
What confuses you?
I didn't realize you had ranks, confessed Gelsa. She ineffectually waved a hand at Dazi's sparse clothing.
I would have expected a uniform?
Dazi sighed and turned her attention back to the Castellan.
Identify yourself and your unit.
Delta 6 Terra, Emancipation Maniple.
Where is your datasmith?
In operational. Independent action initiated.
And what is your standing control order?
Two more Castellans strode past the construct, heading towards the gatehouse hall.
Destroy the enemy. Secure the battle zone. Protect the faithful.
Gelsa felt the Castellan turn its scrutiny on her and Harkus, though it had no face as such. She flinched when a red light gleamed behind its visor and its weapons rose towards her.
Unidentified combatants.
Dazi stood in front of the cybernetic warrior and looked at Gelsa and Harkus as though she hadn't seen them before. Her eyes narrowed.
That's true, she said. You never did say what you were doing up here, Tributai, or who that is with you. Why are you so desperate to get into the command deck?
Gelsa looked at Harkus for help, but the Inquisitor remained silent. She glared at him, trying to urge him to speak.
Put down your weapons, said the Major,
her tone terse. Gelsa let the plasma carbine drop onto the crate and stepped back. Harkus gave up possession of his arc rifle more reluctantly. He hadn't moved his stare from Dazi during the entire exchange.
They were fighting the traitors, said Azad.
I'm aware of that, which is why they're still alive, said Darzi.
She smiled at Gelsa, but there was little warmth in it.
Thank you for saving our lives.
I think I owe you that thanks more, Gelsa replied. That traitor legionary would have smeared me across the wall if you hadn't arrived.
We wouldn't have caught him if you hadn't slowed him down, said Azad, with a lopsided grin and a shrug.
His levity was ended by the sound of an explosion.
I need to get to a Vox station and find out what's happening, and I don't have time for whatever this is, said Darzi.
I'll watch them, offered Azad.
No, you need to get back to the platoon and coordinate the attempts to reclaim the upper stories.
She turned to the Castellan.
Delta 6 Terra, can you comply with fresh orders?
Your authority is recognized, Major.
She eyed Gelsa and Harkus, seemingly weighing up her options.
A compromise, she declared. Delta 6 Terra, you will escort these two unidentified combatants to the command deck, and when there, deliver them safely into the custody of the Hyperesia.
Understood, Major. Categorize unidentified combatants for engagement parameters. Are they faithful or unfaithful?
The Major considered the question, looking first at Harkus and then Gelsa. The Tributi wasn't sure exactly what difference the definition made to the Construct's Soul program, but she was certain she didn't want to be categorized as unfaithful.
You, I trust,
declared Darzi, looking at Gelsa. She switched her gaze to Harkus.
I'm not so sure about him.
I vouch for him,
Gelsa said quickly, before she'd even thought about the consequences. She tried not to let an instant of regret show.
You do? Then if I trust you, I must accept your word for him. Delta 6 Terra, categorize combatants as faithful.
Praise the Omnissiah. Hail the Machine God.
Hail the Machine God,
echoed Gelsa, letting out a ragged breath. The sensation of lightness quickly became a more solid realization as Exarsus's thought filters switched from tactical to strategic mode. The uplifting effect of the Noosphere was caused by the untrammeled presence of the Casus Belli's spirit focused through the MIU of the Princeps Senioris. It radiated a stillness of soul. Not calm, as the spirit of a Titan was ever belligerent by intent, but the violence at its core had become a latency from the actuality. One might think it was relaxing. With noospheric links established with the command module, Exarsus discovered that the source of this dormancy was a cessation of external hostile activity. The battlegroup had finally silenced the guns of Az-Kallak and were circumnavigating the broken citadel, intent upon the valleys beyond, as directed by the Princeps Senioris's order. A dichotomy sparked within the Magos Dominus, as we regarded the completion of the primary mission on the one side, against the counterattack of the Cybernetica that was still ongoing. It was not the first time that the travails of the Skitarii were beneath the notice of the Imperator, which probably regarded its human and once-human protectors as little as a Duluth heats the presence of its own antibodies. A perfunctory assessment reassured the Dominus that while several space marines had escaped to wreak sporadic damage through the Acropolis, there was an absolute zero probability of a further threat to the command module or lower decks. Any positive effect on Exarsus's mood at the thought of the dual victory quickly abated when the Magos appraised herself of the casualty records. A large proportion of the Skitarii were dead, their absence like a blockage in the data stream that nagged at the Magos. The Auxilia, as much as we could tell at this stage before accurate reports had been submitted, had suffered equally harsh losses. Even more distressing was the preliminary finding of the kill efficiency equations, putting the performance of the defenders at a little over 60%. Not only had the victory been costly in terms of personnel, but the expenditure of ammunition and energy cells had almost depleted the Skitarii armories. Exarsus resolved to recalibrate the oppositional factors for the heretic Astartes in light of the data gleaned from the battle. All previous differentials had been based upon non-personal experience or archival records, and thus divorced from proper investigation. The reality of facing the traitor Space Marines was far more informative than the rumour, even though Exassus had downgraded many reports as being exaggerations. The truth was that perhaps much of the archive data V had threaded into the calculations had underestimated the lethality of the fallen creations of the Omnissiah. Pre-calculated effectiveness estimates rated the overall standing of the Dominus's defense forces at 12%. Estimating survival rates among the wounded while reviewing their individual battle memories to experience the extent of their injuries, Exassus engaged defensive failsafes that dedicated the remaining troops to key positions in the Acropolis and Bastions. The Cybernetica remained the most battle-ready asset, but their inflexibility made them poor substitutes in many situations. Exassus left them with their current task of exterminating the renegades still at large. Evidence of Exassus's adjustments was immediately visible when a Scutari Alpha led her team to the Ante-Gate, leading from the atrium to the command module. Elsewhere, troopers redistributed their weapons and ammunition, quickly creating more effective fire teams, while those that gave up their armaments moved among the dead and wounded, acquiring what other materiel they could. In some form or other, they would be ready for the next threat to the Imperator. Chapter 8. Time of Judgment. The sounds of fighting had moved away by the time the tunnel fighters led them back towards the atrium. With Delta VI Terra looming behind them, they followed the two Armageddon natives out into the great hallway. The dead of both sides choked the stairs and galleries, the smoking carcass of a construct here and there among the organic ruin. The air was thick with smoke and the stench of blood. Erratic bursts of fire lit the stairways as squads of Scutari moved among the corpses, firing point-blank into the traitors to ensure they were truly dead, hacking off their heads with buzzing transonic blades. The walls were blackened by lasfire, cratered with plasma impacts and bolt wounds, scarred by deeper welts and molten abrasions. Gelser laid a hand on the cold ferrocrete wall, hoping that the comforting gesture, small as it was, soothed the spirit of the casus belli in some way.
"Brave warrior," she thought, "if I had but a fraction of your strength, indestructible master of war." "Go with Delta VI Terra and report to the Hyperesia," Darzi told them. She laid a hand on Gelser's arm and leaned close, her voice a whisper. "Whatever loyalty you think you owe this man, remember that your oaths to the Legio surpass it."
The urge to confess everything welled up within Gelser. She clamped her jaw shut, worried that some stray word might condemn her to further examination. She answered with a brief nod, afraid to speak.
"Descend,"
instructed Delta VI Terra, using its bulk to shepherd them towards the closest steps. Harkus set off, shoulders hunched, fists clenched. Gelser picked her way over the shattered armor of a traitor legionary, trying not to look at the unpleasant designs molded into the ceramite. Images of degradation and violence that made her shudder, even only half seen. Delta VI Terra made no effort to avoid the renegade, crushing battleplate beneath it as it stomped down the stairs behind her. They had descended two flights when Harkus paused for a few seconds, allowing her to come alongside him. Not so suited to the steps, Delta VI Terra was a few meters behind. "I think we can outpace the construct," he said quietly, keeping his gaze ahead.
"But for how long? And it only takes one shot on target to end everything."
"There are still weapons to scavenge. We can arm ourselves again when out of sight."
"Attack it?"
The thought horrified Gelser.
"That's as bad as killing the Hyperesia. Delta VI Terra is a child of the Machine God. It is only doing its duty."
"You would choose the existence of a cybernetic over the survival of everyone aboard this Titan.
Perhaps I was wrong about you."
"What do you mean? Wrong about what?"
He fell silent as they passed a squad of Scutari standing sentry at the next landing. When they reached the next set of steps, he continued.
"I thought that you possessed the moral courage to help me.
I do.
Gelsa realized she had raised her voice more than she had intended. She continued quietly.
I do. I want to protect the casus belli, but it doesn't mean we should throw away life needlessly.
It is an artificial creation. It isn't alive.
Of course it is, she said. It has a soul. That makes it alive.
Just because it has a lump of cortex wired in there somewhere doesn't mean...
He stopped with a frustrated snort.
It does not matter. Soul or no soul, if it takes us to the Hyperesia, we are both as good as dead.
It does matter,
said Gelsa, not willing to drop the subject.
The Cult Metallica is very clear that all forms of animus are equal in labor and regard in the universal engine.
Equal in labor?
Harkus looked at her with a raised eyebrow.
The Magos render themselves immortal with augmentation and elixir, and you toil to an early death amid fumes and plasma exhaust.
Gelsa said nothing, irritated by his assertion. She wished she could read the theological tracts of the tech priests to rebut his accusations, but aside from a few common maintenance runes, she was illiterate. His words left her feeling mocked and frustrated again.
I was referring to a greater purpose, Gelsa Vingeint, the Inquisitor continued.
They turned onto the penultimate landing, the steps thick with bodies in bloodied white robes and tattered coats, where the Skitarii had held against the traitor's relentless attack while awaiting the reinforcements of the Cybernetica.
One beyond the Imperator.
Beyond?
The thought excited and terrified her.
In what way? I don't want to be reallocated to a starship or forge world. The casus belli is my home. I belong here.
The thought almost brought her to tears.
I see. I had hoped that once my mission here was successfully concluded, you might continue to accompany me on further works in the name of the Emperor.
Join the...
She again realized she had lost control of her volume.
Join the Inquisition?
Not as such. You would aid me in certain situations, nothing more. I admire your resourcefulness.
As before, the words of appreciation made Gelsa's heart quicken. She turned her head and faked a cough to hide the smile that she could not contain. So stark was her feeling that it almost instantly sparked paranoia. The kind words were at odds with Harkus's generally dismissive attitude. Several times now he had belittled her faith, not to mention the insult of desecrating her machine-god-augmented body with the stolen stim. He spoke of respect, but rarely showed it. The thought led her to a moment of revelation.
I think there's another way, she said. I don't know how these Castellans work exactly, but I've been around the tech priests enough to pick up a few ideas.
Another way to what?
To get inside the Holy Decks without the Hyperesia killing us.
Summoning a quintet of armory-slaved servitors to attend to the heavily damaged warskin, Exarchus approached the Ante and extended a neospheric cipher into the watchdog systems. Another tech priest responded to the Magos' intervention. Mondrus.
Salutations, Dominus. It is with satisfaction that I discover your continued survival.
The immense gates opened as Exarchus approached, letting forth billows of red vapor like the breath of a mythical beast. He advanced into the welcoming haze, puffing out clouds of his own incense to mingle with that of the command deck, as if they were pack creatures exchanging scent marks. Exarchus.
Likewise, I am grateful of the efforts of the command crew for attaining victory over the enemy citadel. Our mutual efforts serve the machine god's design. I shall review the archive of the action with interest.
We passed under the gateway and into the Ante. The chamber was quite plain, silvered like the forge world that had raised the casus belli to the service of the machine god. A servo skull detached from a docking alcove at the crux of wall and ceiling, and floated down to the Magos, the hollows of its eyes lit with a red gleam from the rudimentary cogitator within. Exarchus recognized it as one of Mondaras's peripherals, one of the Logistarius's favored students, before an implantation mishap had ended her promising ascent towards the higher wisdoms. It extended a data spike, indicating a desire for physical interface. It was an unusual request, but Exasus held up a tendril that ended in a data port and allowed the servo skull to connect its protrusion. Start access. Exasus, Mondorus, shielded. Exasus cautiously accepted the Logistarius's invitation.
Is there some issue with the noosphere of which I am ignorant? The functioning of the noosphere is unimpaired, to my knowledge. Pertaining to the Princeps Senioris's recent command, we are progressing directly into the region beyond the fortress without resupply. This is known to me. I do not understand the need to keep this exchange from the noosphere. We have meteorological reports that show intense electromagnetic activity will engulf the area imminently. This storm will seriously impair the systems of the Casus Belli. We will be unable to communicate with the rest of the battle group at a time when we are not fully recovered from the losses and damage just suffered. I thought it pertinent to your conjecture that the enemy were attempting to isolate us. And the direct transmission is because you do not wish this exchange to be perceived as a challenge to the Princeps Senioris's orders.
Correct.
To the extent that you do not wish the rest of the command crew to even know we have conducted ciphered communication.
The existence of such communication could be interpreted as dissent, or worse.
End access. Exasus, Mondorus, shielded. There was a moment of dislocation as the Logistarius severed the link. The servo skull retracted its data spike and drifted back to its docking point. Exasus was unsure what to make of both Mondorus's peculiar behavior and the Princeps Senioris's insistence on continuing the advance when the battlegroup's effectiveness was compromised. In the case of Iolona's motivations, there was a significant probability that the Titan commander was under some greater indictment from the Legio hierarchy. Perhaps the enemy's own idiosyncratic behavior at Az-Kalak had presented an unforeseen opportunity to conclude the current war phase at a swifter rate than previously anticipated. V pondered this as V moved from the ante into the lower but broader chamber beyond, known as the Pronaos. In direct contrast to the unadorned ante, which existed as a physical incarnation of the disparity between the mundane and the divine, the Pronaos of the Casus Belli was a highly decorated structure. The walls were lined with half-pillars, with capitals shaped like mechanical devices, their interlocking gears and belts forming vaults across the ceiling. The columns were lit from above by tubular lumens, powered by the holy gases, bathing the columns in reds, purples, and blues, in simulation of the aurora-lit skies above the Templum Metallica Majoris. In between the columns were rendered the mask-like faces of the Casus Belli's creators, four great magos of near-forgotten antiquity that had raised up the Imperator to crush the enemies of the Machine God. The Magos Dominus's reflection was caught in a flat expanse in the center, placing his image among those of the legendary founders. The center of the silvered floor was inscribed with a 12-lugged cog in golden channels, the principal points decorated with runes of electrum, copper, and red iron steel. Intricate circuit tracery filled the symbol, each pathway a metaphor for the holy mysteries of the cult Metallica. Every potential course a different route to enlightenment in the service of the Machine God, be it as Biologis, Hermetica, Archaeotectonica, or one of the other dozens of disciplines a tech priest might study. Exasus paused to locate the conjunction between Logistarius and Ziliarchus that V currently occupied, tracing the routes from the mother nodes around the hub to the higher wisdoms etched into the outer ring. Over and over, V moved a needle-thin digit across the rune for Hierarchos. It was perhaps the most important tenet of the cult Metallica, a measure of a tech priest's dedication to the ideal of rank based upon progress towards the 12 higher wisdoms. Though of considerable rank among the Scutari, Exasus had stalled in the middle term of V's path to enlightenment, secondary even to the Moderatus Prime. He had envisaged a period in which service upon one of the great god-machines of the Legio Metallica would elevate this progression to knowledge, but the truth was that opportunities for accomplishment had been severely curtailed. Only continued examination and refinement of this theorem provided any measurable increase in understanding the mysteries of the cosmic engine. Exarsus lifted away the slender manipulative tendril and moved towards the gate that led directly into the Zeller, the prescribed term for the command module in the lexicon of the Legio Metallica. A single portal barred entry, flanked by two Heracli combat servitors. Each vat-grown brute was as big as a castellan and modified with multi-barreled assault cannons and jagged-toothed sawhands. They stared dumbly at the Magos from under their heavy hoods, their eyes almost lost in the expanses of their flat faces. Exarsus extended a noospheric link to the door control systems, and the panel between the Heracli hissed out of sight into the bulkhead. Gelser stopped and turned on the stair, waiting for Delta VI Terra to catch up.
Delta VI Terra, confirm your mission.
Ensure your survival and compliance until I have delivered you to the command deck. Destroy, secure, protect.
Confirm that our status is faithful.
You are confirmed as faithful.
And you have an ongoing duty to protect the faithful.
Standard battle parameters have not been altered. Destroy, secure, protect.
Good. Then you cannot allow any harm to befall us until we are designated as unfaithful.
That is correct.
Delta VI Terra pointed down the stair with a gun barrel.
Continue towards the command deck ante.
Gelser complied, ignoring the deepening frown that creased Harkus's brow.
Can you self-categorize us as unfaithful?
Any attempt to prevent my mission accomplishment will render you unfaithful.
Like trying to escape?
Gelser asked, with a meaningful look at Harkus.
Yes. Attempted evasion of custody would be evidence of unfaithfulness.
And if anyone tried to harm the faithful, would that also be evidence of unfaithfulness?
Yes.
Harkus's sharp glance signaled his realization. They reached the lowest level of the atrium. At the far end was the gate into the ante between two silvered pillars. The two halves of the gilded portal made the iron skull icon of the Legio, and around them were moulded the 12 runes of the higher wisdoms. The entrance was guarded by a squad of Scitarii, their white coats streaked with bloodstains and oil smears, in places ragged from shrapnel and burned by plasma or promethium near misses. They wore steel-coloured armour beneath, and each had at least one bionic, a leg or hand or skull, silver in colour to honour their metal-clad forge world. The Alpha stepped forward to halt them and held out a mechanical hand. Her other arm was a reticulated bionic tentacle that curled around the grip of a radium carbine.
The ante is sealed, she said.
My command requires that we contact the Hyperesia.
Delta VI Terra gestured towards the gate.
Access to the ante is required.
Only the Scitarii Alpha's chin and mouth were visible beneath her visored helm, her lips forming a thin line as she considered this. Gelser heard a sharp crackle and realized it was a voxcaster built into her suit.
We have a castellan requiring entry, Magos, said the Alpha. Escorting.
She looked up at the castellan and waved a hand towards Gelser and Harkus.
Who are they?
They are faithful. They are in my custody. They are under my protection, the construct replied. I require entry.
Castellan with unidentified companions, the Alpha said.
Gelser tried her best to remain calm, taking particular care to regulate her breathing. She measured each breath in and out, reminding herself that her body was just a biological mechanism. She had served the machine god faithfully, and even if her mortal shell were destroyed, her soul would survive. A word drew their attention to a circular panel on the plinth of the gate, adorned with another cog symbol of the cult Metallica. It rotated slowly through several turns, and then swung outwards, revealing a hole. For a moment, a green shimmer lit the interior, and then a servo skull emerged. It drifted forward on its anti-gravity field, its eyes glowing with jade power. The floating skull descended, trailing slender cables and tatters of parchment inscribed with benedictions of the machine god. Its lifeless eyes regarded Gelser first, small lenses within the eye sockets clicking into place as it focused. It drifted to Harkus, and then turned its attention to Delta Six Terra. A brief spurt of binaric erupted from the servo skull's speaker, and the construct replied with an equally short spasm of sound.
"Protocols initiated,"
grated the skull.
"Faith confirmed."
It then rose up, reversed towards the capstone, and disappeared back into its hole. The cover swung shut and locked back in place. Gelser looked up at the large portal, absently tapping the multi-tool with her metal-tipped fingers, the sound swallowed by the atrium. She steadfastly refused to look at Harkus, telling herself that she did not need to see what the Inquisitor was doing. A hidden mechanism clanked within the gate, and the outline of a smaller entrance appeared in the left-hand door, though it was still twice Gelser's height, capable of admitting a Magos or Castellan. With a wheeze of hydraulics, the door opened inwards. A billow of incense issued forth, its musky smell both familiar yet alien to the tributi. She only knew it second-hand, clinging to the robes of the tech priests, lingering in the air after their departure. It reminded her of the initiations, and brought back memories of her implantation ceremony when she had earned her exoskeleton and the mark of the faithful on her forehead. She remembered the incantations, the words incomprehensible, but as regular as the beating of her heart, issued with digital precision by the tech priests officiating the induction. Caught up in recollection, it took her a moment to realize that she wasn't imagining the mechanical chant. It was coming from the open door. And it was not just one voice, but many, each separate, but part of a whole, like the links of a chain, or the gears and belts of a motor. It was the will of the machine god given linguistic form.
"Praise the Omnissiah," she declared,
filled with the urge to declare her faith.
"Hail the machine god!"
The Skitari Alpha waved for them to proceed.
"Enter,"
urged Delta Six Terra, again using its proximity to encourage them forward. Harkus went first, but glanced back up into the atrium, perhaps considering a last attempt to flee. He stepped over the lip of the door, plunging into the whirl of light and vapors. Gelser stood trembling at the threshold. It was not apprehension that caused her to delay, but anticipation. Regardless of the circumstances, she was about to enter a sanctum of the cult Metallica. It was hard not to think of it as a reward for her efforts over the last few hours.
"Enter," Delta Six Terra ordered again. "Failure to comply is unfaithful."
Nothing was further from Gelser's thoughts. As she stepped into the ante, she could not stop a broad grin, feeling more intoxicated by the occasion than any amount of illicit machine spirits had ever made her. The cellar was noospherically shielded, so that at the instant of access, the Magos was confronted by a welter of fresh information exchange. We did not have to tap into a feed. It was simply there, filling the air like the swirls of incense. Updates and data logs seeped into his cogitators as we moved through the archway and headed towards his assigned monitoring position. Detecting the noospheric signal emanating from Exasus, the station's spirit awoke, broadcasting a medley of welcome and security messages that the Magos unconsciously swept aside into short-term archive. We accessed the meteorological profile that Mondarus had highlighted, but there was no need to rely on the prognostications within. The tumultuous environment of the Azor Fire Lesser was plainly evident from the surveyor readings and the view through the main canopies. Beyond Azkallak, the mountains reared into steep peaks that scraped the clouds, their flanks scoured down to dirt and rock by millennia of previous industry. The fortress guarded a pass of sorts, a vast natural gorge broad enough for the battle group to advance along at wide dispersal, stretching deep across the central highlands that dominated the main southern landmass of Nicomedua. The clouds themselves were dark thunderheads, touched with strange coruscations of red that lit them from within, a product of unnatural climate alteration. At some unknown time in Nicomedua's history, the world had been augmented with atmospheric processes, presumably to boost agricultural production. The mountains themselves had been turned into housing for these vast climate manipulators, their pinnacles pierced with hundreds of large venting shafts that had since been turned into a sprawling network of caves and corridors that had homed millions before the rebellion. During the Age of Strife, the processes had fallen into inevitable disrepair, and their malfunctioning had created extreme and erratic storm conditions around the mountain, not just affecting wind and precipitation, but actively eroding the upper layers of atmosphere, so that the highlands were infrequently bathed with heightened levels of stellar radiation. One such burst was already affecting the weather patterns, creating a monumental tempest in the valleylands directly ahead of the battle group's advance. Jagged spears spat groundwards in a continual discharge, lighting the darkness that swathed the pass. The tips of the mountains were wreathed with their own blue halo of glimmering plasma, as were the hundreds of gargantuan conductor rods that had been erected to harness the energy generation potential of the constant storms. The battle group's remaining warhounds advanced towards the atmospheric maelstrom, silhouetted against the flashes of power. The Imperator and warlords followed just a few minutes behind, leaving the smaller reavers and warriors to form the rear of the group. Even at range, Exarchus could feel the noospheric disruption of the storm head. As tinnitus might befoul the hearing of a normal human, so the tech priest sensed a background buzz through his data systems. Iolona, General Broadcast.
Void shields will not be operational. Surveyor range reduced to minimum. Reactor relays and other systems will also be affected. All god engines to advance at moderated pace.
A tension sparked through the data links, but Exarchus could not separate the growing external influence on the noosphere from the negative impact of his companion's apprehensions. The noosphere entered a lull phase, the only contact from the unthinking servitors, all sentient minds within the command module turned inwards to their own monitoring systems. From the Princeps Senioris flowed a sense of purpose, the casus belli set upon its course with a solid determination despite the perils ahead. Positive indicators caressed Exarchus's calculations, improving the outcomes of his extrapolations. In the stillness of the noosphere, Exarchus picked up a flurry of ciphered exchanges between the moderati. Remembering Mondorus's comment about such coded conversations, the Magos wondered what this peak in activity signified. A possible explanation revealed itself just a few seconds later, when the Princeps Senioris issued a battle group-wide pronouncement. Iolona, General Broadcast.
All god machines are to come to an immediate halt and assume defensive standings. Await further instruction.
Local.
Contrary to previous instruction, the casus belli will receive Skitari replacements. We shall rendezvous with rapid deployment troop carriers before proceeding.
Taken aback by this announcement, it took Exarchus a while to process the full implications. Even as we made subservient inquiries through the noosphere, we gave voice to the protest that boiled up. Exarchus.
Why was I not consulted in the particulars of this decision?
Iolona.
You were otherwise engaged in the final conduct of purging the enemy. To avoid further delays to our advance, the motion was forwarded to High Command and approved without your input.
Exarchus.
This is a further unorthodoxy to which I have been subjected.
Iolona.
What you term unorthodox, I think of as simply expedient. The running of the casus belli and the conduct of our campaign do not revolve around your personal needs, Dominus.
Though there was no rebuke assignation on the transmission, it was hard for Exarchus to interpret these words as merely literal. It was highly irregular that we had not been informed earlier of the Princeps Senioris's desire to reinforce the Skitari complement. Geverin.
Had you not expended so many of your soldiers, we would not be forced to replace them in this manner. As well as a fresh Skitari company, the reinforcements will be commanded by their own Magos Dominus.
Exarchus.
operational and tactical command of all Skitari forces will reside in me, unless I receive direct contradiction from Legion Command.
The Magos's outburst was fueled in part by indignation at the Moderatus's innuendo that V had been in some way inefficient in V's defense of the Imperator. Iolona.
You will extend all possible cooperation to the incoming forces, Dominus.
The Princeps Senioris's statement was accompanied by the full weight of Cassus Belli's personality, impressing upon the tech priest the importance of their position. Exassus's concerns felt petty against the Imperator's needs, and had V been consulted, V would have accepted reinforcement, if not outright argued in its favor. It was irrational to allow the emotive substance of being circumscribed to dictate the future safety of the Imperator. Exassus.
I will share all data logs and calculations with the incoming forces. Please identify the source and commander of the incoming forces.
Mondorus.
They are Kinnikus Augmentati of the Kaisorian League, under the guidance of Magos Dominus, except his Keterinagar Skitara Sintama Tarkius Olvesha. They are being deployed by Skyspear and will arrive in 8.3 minutes.
To Exassus, who typically measured interactions in milliseconds, it seemed a very long time to wait. The haze of incense obscured a floor polished to a mirror shine, so that Gelsa caught occasional glimpses of her own reflection between wisps of diffused scarlet. It was cold underfoot, bare metal beneath her naked feet. The ceiling was the same, and it felt as if she had stepped into a droplet of molten plasteel, metal in all directions in imitation of the sacred ground of the forge world that had created the Titan. Six plain columns lined the walls to each side, their fluted capitals merging with the vaulted ceiling. Recesses between the pillars housed murmuring servitors, each no more than a torso and head attached to the wall, their lips in ceaseless motion. Listening carefully, she made out a scattering of phrases from the babble of Technolingua.
The Eighth is supreme, being divisible by the cardinal and the binary. Upon the vox do we hear the voice of the machine god rendered mortal. Unto every design is laid wisdom, beneath every wisdom lies a design. No machine is arbitrary, for in its workings is found the faultless logic of the Omnissiah.
They were all teachings of the cult Metallica, lessons she had attended since her earliest memory. Much of it she still did not understand, but had learned by rote to honor the machine god. Gelsa had thought to see white-clad figures attending to the arcane systems of the Cassus Belli, but then remembered that they were in the ante, the outer chamber. The louder chanting of Technolingua came from beyond a doorway at the far end, reverberating along a broad passageway. She took a step towards the door, eager to see the tech priests at their stations. Halt! The command came from a servo skull that floated down in front of her, glaring with an unliving emerald gaze.
Await, thou Magos!
It drifted away, its suspensor field cutting interwoven vortices through the incense. Gelsa noticed more servo skulls close to the ceiling, hovering beneath the vaults. She could not tell if their glinting eyes were active or dormant, or whether any other mind monitored what they saw. Gelsa wanted to pace. She was so full of apprehensive energy, but contented herself with adjusting the grip width of the multi-tool. The buzz of its small motor vibrated in her hands as the jaw opened and closed.
"Is that really necessary?" said Harkus, scowling.
She threw him a sour look, but stopped, his chiding making her feel foolish. A movement at the doorway drew her attention. A figure swept into the ante, borne upon six many-jointed legs that clacked noisily on the hard floor. The body was long and hunched, concealed for the most part beneath layers of pale robes, showing only a flash of segmented metal and dangling pipes as the Magos moved closer. Four spindly arms, each within its own voluminous sleeve, waved and swayed as the senior tech priest advanced. Gelsa peered into the shadow of its cowl and gasped. Its face was almost untouched by bionic enhancement, a slender female visage framed by coils of wire. Gelsa was accustomed to the insect-like masks of the tech priests, and it took her a moment to adjust to the juxtaposition of unadulterated human flesh among the sprawling mechanics. Dark brown eyes regarded them passively, while a tentacle-like appendage fitted with a cluster of artificial lenses slid out from under the robe. A strobing fan of narrow red rays passed over Gelsa's face before moving to Harkus's, and then flicked off as the tendril withdrew. The servo skull floated over the tech priest's shoulder.
"Inconsequential," intoned the skull, as the Magos turned away. "The Hyperesia have been summoned."
"Wait," called Gelsa, taking a step forward. A disturbingly animalistic growl from Delta VI Terra stopped her taking another. The Magos stopped, but did not turn back. The servo skull hovered in front of Gelsa, uncomfortably close to her face. Unable to bear its scrutiny, she dropped to one knee, her gaze fixed on the floor.
"State your inquiry."
"A blessing, revered Magos, for a faithful servant of the machine god."
The Magos's claws clicked on the floor as it turned. Gelsa dared look up, holding her breath. There was no expression on the face as it tilted down towards her on a telescoping neck, no less a mask than the artificial visages of the other tech priests. She saw tiny reflections of herself in the dilated pupils, the multi-tool clenched tight in both hands, her own eyes wide with pleading.
"Petition accepted."
The Magos beckoned her to approach with a clawed hand. Gelsa could not help but notice the similarity to her own, as though the tech priest's limbs were a version of her exoskeleton purged of the unnecessary flesh within. She stood within arm's reach, looking up into the tech priest's impassive stare. Dexterous sub-digits extended from the palm of the mechanical hand, flexing as they slithered free. Lubricant glistened on their tips. The Magos bent forward, laying the worm-like appendages upon Gelsa's bald head, their touch cold but reassuring. The tributi sighed, feeling relief wash through her as dribbles of oil rolled down her face and neck. This close, the scent of the Magos's incense was almost overpowering. It stung Gelsa's eyes and cloyed in her throat, both enriching and unwelcome. The tendril fingers moved forward to the cog upon her brow, and she felt a quiver of connection. Thought packages fired across her synapses, leaving their message burned into her thoughts.
"The will of the machine god moves within you. You are the vessel. The Omnisire is the spark. Bear witness to true faith and remain pure within the impurity of flesh."
With the words came a vision, one of innumerable gears interlaced across the galaxy, some turning fast, others slow, all driven by the same purpose. Stars were cosmic furnaces driving the engine of the universe. Whirling planetary orbits described impossibly complex motions through time and space. Gelsa was a tiny mote of existence in the infinite, yet, despite her minuscule nature, she felt like an essential part of the whole. The cord digits broke contact and whipped back into the Magos's hand. Gelsa staggered back, trembling from head to foot. The Magos turned away, limbs retracting within the robe. The image of the cosmic engine started to fade, and Gelsa tried desperately to sear it into her memory, to capture something of its eternal grandeur. The harder she tried, the more she fixed upon a detail, the more she forgot of the rest, until she was left with nothing but a vague sense of ceaseless motion. The Magos had gone, though the servo skull remained, its dispassionate stare fixed upon her.
"Praise the machine god," it declared.
Gelsa hung her head, her shoulders slumped, elated but exhausted, joyful yet empty.
"Praise the machine god,"
she whispered, a tear rolling down her cheek.
Chapter 9. Victory and Defeat.
"Your escort has arrived," declared the servo skull.
A few seconds later, the sub-door wheezed open. Three men and two women stepped inside. They wore cloaks lined with red cloth over grubby coveralls and carried long mauls. Two of them had bulky las pistols hanging on simple holsters at their waists. Gelser didn't recognize any of them as from the group that had attacked Harkus, but she could barely remember what had happened with everything that had taken place since. Perhaps they didn't know she and Harkus were being hunted. The glares they directed at Harkus and Gelser told a different story.
"We've been looking for you,"
said one of the gun wielders, tapping her club against the side of her leg.
"Didn't expect to find you up here on the holy decks."
"Heretics," sneered another.
He looked directly at Gelser.
"The ingratitude makes me sick, to turn on the Legio like that."
"You're fortunate,"
said the one who had spoken first. Her cog badge clasp identified her as the leader. She pulled something from a pocket, a slender silver chain from which hung a pale wooden box about the size of a thumb. An eye with two bars across it was branded into the front.
"The Inquisition would do far worse for impersonating one of their order."
Gelser looked at Harkus.
"Is that it?"
she said, unimpressed.
"That's your sigil?"
"It is the authority it conveys that has the power," he replied testily.
He stared at the Hyperesia with narrowed eyes.
"If you comprehended the magnitude of your error, you would beg now for forgiveness and swift release rather than face the torments that will surely follow this treachery."
The one who had spoken first beckoned with her club.
"Move your filth out of these sacred halls."
"Delta Six Terra, what is the status of our faithfulness?" asked Harkus, looking up at the warbot. "The two unidentified combatants are faithful."
"Stop talking to the holy warrior," snapped one of the Hyperesia. "Your interaction defiles its spirit."
Harkus stepped towards the door and motioned for Gelser to follow.
"Hostile forces are still at large in the Acropolis," he said. "The faithful require protection." "I will provide protection to the faithful," rumbled Delta Six Terra, following with long, slow strides. "Destroy, secure, protect."
From the rear rampart of the Acropolis, Exarchus looked back at the surrounds of Az-Kallak. It was only from this vantage point that the light differential over the city and the surrounding hills could be so clearly seen. It reminded Exarchus of a stellar eclipse, standing in darkness while viewing beams of light in the distance. With augmented vision, they could see the accompanying host of the Tech Guard flowing into the city and through fortress walls. He was too distant to detect any neospheric activity, but the occasional spark of brightness betrayed a plasma shot or other high-powered discharge, indicating that the rebels had not yet been eradicated. While vanguard battalions and companies of Rust Stalkers cleansed the ruins, squadrons of Ironstrider-mounted dragoons and Ballistari pushed out onto the slopes of the flanking mountains. Slower columns of quadruped dune crawlers followed, providing escort to tracked bulk carriers. The smaller streets restricted the progress of the knights, so that the warrior machines of House Raven were confined to a perimeter in the outskirts, while their smaller suits patrolled along the main arterial routes. The flare of an activated ion shield here and there betrayed the last desperate counterattacks of Az-Kallak's defenders. Exarchus watched the blur of six sky spears as they raced past the broken towers of the citadel, aptly named for their sleek but prow-heavy design. Their nose cones still glowed red-hot from orbital entry. Exarchus tracked their trajectories and calculated that they would arrive within the next 45 seconds. He had not been idle during the wait, and had accessed every data log entry he could find concerning the new arrivals. There seemed very little about them, given that the Chrysorian League was one of the more powerful blocks of Metallica, an alliance of 14 Forge cities, and a member of the Inner Council. Exarchus had noted with some exasperation that they were not part of the Tech Guard proper, but had been attached as auxilia to the formation shortly before the Legio departed for Nicomedua. Most of their previous engagements were cipher-locked, and Exarchus could not discern any reason why that might be so. But it was not Viz's position to judge the incoming Magos. Viz's position was to ensure a cooperative defense of the Casus Belli. As the Princeps Senioris had so curtly pointed out, all personal considerations were secondary to that duty. Even so, Negative fluctuations affected Exarsus's cogitations as we observed the sky spears slowing, their gravitic repellers gleaming purple in the heightened air static of the storm front. Descent jets cut out, and the dropcraft slid towards the Casus Belli as though lifted by the glow of their repellers. Four of the sky spears pitched towards landing points not far from the leg bastions, while the remaining two halted their descent on a level with the Acropolis. Engines humming, they buzzed over the Magos Dominus, missing the upper towers of the Acropolis by a small margin, and slewed rapidly to a stop over the frontal apron. Exarsus hurried around the side of the Acropolis and came upon the main parapet as the sky spears touched down, the pulsing of their repellers pushing pools of still wet blood into crimson rivulets across the ferrocrete. Attitude jets burned bright, keeping the two craft hovering just over the parapet while their bellies opened up, the bright glare from their interiors lighting the blood-spattered courtyard. Disembarkation ramps extended like unrolling tongues of metal, their corrugated lengths flattening against the rampart. Their angled portions hardened into steps, and the first of the augmentati descended into view. Moving out of the ante, Gelsa discovered that the atrium was thronged with Skitarii soldiers. Mindless servitors dragged away the bodies of the dead, while tech priests performed inspections of broken automata, performing last rites where needed, before salvaging the data cores. Gelsa's attention was drawn to a tech priest with dozens of spindly limbs opening up the armored shell of a battle construct. A Laz suture played over the pulsing cortex within, repairing input to the organic brainstem.
"They will be reborn," intoned Delta Six Terra. "The Machine God presides."
Surrounded by the Hyperesia, they were led up the first flight of stairs and into the corridors towards the aft chambers of the Acropolis. The leader hastened them on, but Harkus hung back with a slower-moving battle construct, much to her annoyance.
"Delaying isn't going to help you avoid what's due," she said, jabbing her maul towards the Inquisitor. "Justice is coming soon."
"And what form will this justice take?" asked Harkus. They turned into a smaller corridor. Bodies were piled high on one side, stripped of uniform and war gear. A door at the far end led into a chamber that glowed with flamelight. Tracked servitors rumbled in and out, lifting up the bodies to take them inside.
"The Incineratorum," said Gelsa. "That's where you're going to do it."
"Do what?" asked Harkus, though it was obvious what he planned.
"There'll be no more heresy from you,"
one of the Hyperesia said, with a grin.
"Just flesh smoke and bone ash. I think you should suffer first, but the Moderatus Prime said to get it done quickly," said the leader. "Nobody's going to rescue you this time."
They were halfway along the passage. Gelsa clamped a hand over her mouth and nose to keep out the smell of blood and escaping bodily fluids, a stench even the incense memory of the Acropolis could not mask.
"What are you going to do to us?"
Harkus demanded loudly. He glanced at Gelsa and tilted his head towards Delta Six Terra.
"No, that's not what I meant,"
said Gelsa, realizing what the Inquisitor intended. She looked at the leader of the Hyperesia.
"Don't answer him. We're under the protection of the Castellan."
"Save your breath," the leader replied. "You're heretics, and you deserve to die."
"Are you going to do it?" snapped Harkus. "How? What are you going to do?"
"Don't say anything,"
Gelsa stopped and turned to Harkus.
"We can warn them."
"We'll do it quickly, like the Moderatus Prime told us to,"
said another of the Hyperesia. He flicked greasy hair out of his face and patted his las pistol.
"We'll shoot you and dump the bodies in the Incineratorum."
Delta Six Terra stopped and raised the phosphor blasters in its fist. The combustor over its shoulder twitched as it targeted the Hyperesia.
"Threat detected."
"Just go. Say nothing,"
Gelsa urged them. Harkus tugged at her arm, pulling her back from the Castellan's line of fire.
"They are heretics," said the Hyperesia leader. "We are going to execute them."
"Faith status established. Insufficient authority to alter faith status."
Delta VI Terra's weapons tracked the enforcers as they backed away, gathering closer to their leader.
"They are the heretics!"
shouted the one with the las pistol, his empty hand moving to the weapon's grip.
"No!"
Gelsa tried to step forward, but Harkus wrenched her back.
"Threats to the faithful are unfaithful. Defense protocols initiated. Destroy, secure, protect."
On first examination, the new soldiery appeared little different from the other tech guard of the Legio. They wore the signature white coats of Metallica and displayed an array of gunmetal bionics. There were small, visible details, insignia and edgings of coats and robes that marked them out from Exarchus's own warriors, but a far more telling difference was the newer spheric aura that surrounded them. It was a dense mass of continual exchange, as dark to Exarchus's probing as the thunderhead that covered the valley behind them. The crash of boots on steps and then ferrocrete was near perfect, as was their mustering in squads in lines facing their transports. A surge of noospheric activity preceded weapons simultaneously lifted in salute to the emerging Magos. It seemed a needlessly inefficient display, and Exarchus was unsure whether the benefit was meant to be Viz or the accompanying Dominuses. It hinted at unresolved issues of ego. To Exarchus, authority was self-evident and required no such ostentatious behavior. A strange thought distracted Ver. Vi wished that Vi had donned Vi's war skin for the encounter. Vi had decided against that course of action on the grounds that Exarchus Tactical would not be best placed to integrate the strategic needs of both Skitarii forces, and the warskin was still undergoing repair. Looking at the newcomers' gleaming arc rifles and unsullied uniforms, Exarchus concluded that a greater physical presence might have been of benefit in the exchange that was to follow. Chastising herself for such nervous meandering, Exarchus wondered why the other Magos delayed their arrival. Were they receiving instruction, or simply testing Exarchus's patience in order to exert some greater authority? The Magos Dominus was tempted to depart as a signal of contempt for the unnecessary hesitation, but opted to remain on the grounds that it might be interpreted as ceding command. A blue tint touched the light from the closest sky spear, and a second later the Augmentatis Magos Dominus slid into view. The cerulean glow came from the circle of suspensor units that splayed from the Magos's circumference like a planetary ring. The greater part of Magos Dominus Exceptis Caterina Gar Scitare Syntomatarchius Olvatia was a horizontally segmented sphere held inside the suspensor toroid, with a mane of long, slender sensor tendrils undulating across the upper hemisphere. Exarchus was surprised that Vi's fellow Magos had travelled outside of a warskin, as it was immediately obvious that Olvatia's form had even less combat potential than Exarchus's. The noosphere throbbed like a heartbeat at the approach of the other Dominus, the Magos Exceptus's presence bending it like a mass on a space-time gradient, absorbing the data flow just by existing. An audible hum accompanied Olvatia's progress, while a forced binaric shout issued from the grilled mouths of the attendant alphas. The noosphere contorted with the exhortation, signaling the Dominus's arrival to the tech priests within the Casus belly. Five more Chrysorian tech priests emerged from the command transport a few seconds after their Magos, as diffuse in form as any Exarchus had encountered. Two hunched humanoids, the other three far less easy to categorize with their many jointed limbs and articulated mechadendrites, swathed in white and red robes. Exarchus interposed herself between Olvatia and the Ante of the Acropolis. The other Magos drifted to a halt just out of reach, and the segments of the upper hemisphere of the main body slid backwards a quarter arc, revealing Olvatia's pinched, bionically grafted face. A swift analysis of the underlying bone structure confirmed a female-origin humanoid, though Exarchus knew better than to make identity assumptions based on such transitory physical details. Only the skull, brain, and nervous system tissue remained. A waxy fake skin covered the remains of Olvatia's head and face, embedded crystal orbs glimmering from the sockets. The fake skin folded awkwardly as partially inflated lips approximated a smile.
pleased to make your acquaintance, Magos Dominus Militaris Shauzanus Gitara Ziliakis Exassus.
A noospheric data point tagged Exassus's processes to exchange security and identity protocols. Among the swift burst of traffic was a standard persona construct package. She, her, her, hers, herself. Chronological, binaric, Olvatia, Nuosferent, 291-8721. Exassus noted that Olvatia still identified with her female origins, despite the almost complete lack of physical resemblance to the person she had been. Occasionally, a high-ranking tech priest would shed such identifiers, but it was striking how lasting such early self-views persisted beyond the flesh. His own genderless identity was extant from his first cogent thoughts, a part of his self-determination, even before any abstraction of his physical form. V responded in kind as V extended an appendage in greeting.
Welcome to the Casus Belli, Magos Dominus Exceptis Keterina Gar Scitara Syntomatarchius Olvatia. V. Ver. Viz. Viz. Verself. Chronotangent. Binaric. Exassus. Nuosferent 4458947E. Ziliakis.
They regarded each other with a full suite of pseudo-physical and digital senses, the noosphere purring between them with assessment vibrations. Exassus was determined that V would extend no further invitation unless a formal request was made, and it seemed that Olvatia was equally adamant the current Magos Dominus should cede command directly. The standoff was interrupted by a sudden motion from the Casus Belli. Exassus broke off from V's rival and hurried to the frontal parapet. The last of the relief augmentati were racing up the steps of the port bastions, those within the starboard already secured as the foot started to lift. V swung back towards Olvatia.
The Princeps Senioris is keen to avoid delays.
V measured V's next words and opted to voice them as suggestion rather than command until the matter of hierarchos was unified between them.
You should deploy your troops within so that we can secure the Acropolis.
Olvatia did not reply immediately, and Exassus suspected she would try to force the issue of dominance. Instead, she extended a noospheric frond to his receptors. Olvatia.
Sympathies for your loss of personnel. A fraught time for all. Let us endeavour to raise ourselves above personal ego for the betterment of all.
It seemed a strange thing to say, effectively suggesting that they ignore the protocols of hierarchos. Exassus toyed with the idea of exerting V's position more strenuously, but in an effort to maintain amity, V did not argue the point. Exassus, conciliatory. V undulated alongside the other Magos and extended a limb towards the open gateway.
My alphas and battle priests are keen to integrate our conjoined forces.
A noospheric pulse from Olvatia had the augmentati running to the gate a second later, followed more serenely by the two magi. As the battle group headed into the storm-wreathed valley, the interference grew stronger. Arcs of scarlet fire played across the void shields, each lightning strike rippling coruscations of bright purple and white about the titans. Dark hail started to fall, some of the stones as large as fists. They posed no threat to the armor of a war engine, but soon the constant drumming became an audible counterpart to the static crackle that beset the noosphere and voxlinks. Wherever Exassus extended his senses, be it biological or digital, a numbing drone greeted her. Visibility was similarly impaired. In the gloom beneath the immense thunderhead, storm lamps lit the way, their beams seeming to flicker in the monumental deluge. Data feeds sputtered and stalled beneath the onslaught of electromagnetic discharge, and feedback surges rattled into the Magos' system like impact vibrations. V had returned to his monitor station to witness the Casus Belli's entry into the stormfront, but doing so had meant leaving Olvatia alone in the Acropolis. Between the intermissions inflicted by the storm activity and the augmentati proprietary cipher channels, it was impossible for Ver to study exactly what the new arrivals were doing. Exasus was forced to use visual and auditory feeds from across the Titan to supplement the intermittent noospheric data, which was a time-consuming process. A few minutes after crossing the outer boundary of the Tempest, they lost contact with the rest of the battle group. Like sparks whirled away on a hurricane, the noospheric signatures of the other Titans disappeared, leaving the casus belli to forge along with only the glimmer of their lamps to signal their positions. Mondarus.
We can draw reassurance that whatever besets us, it is equally difficult for any foe. The elements are our only enemy for the present.
Exasus did not agree, but chose not to voice any doubts. The matter of his continued command rank had not been brought up again since the arrival of the new Scutari contingent, but he was of no mind to draw attention to herself in the eye of the Princeps Senioris. Iolina had been silent since Exasus's return to the Zella, an absence of communication easily explained by the need to focus all of her effort on guiding the Imperator through the storm. In contrast to Mondarus's attempt at positivity, Exasus found herself drawn into a declining morale gradient by the thought that their uninterrupted advance served the purposes of the enemy more than their own. If his conclusions that the traitors had been attempting to weaken the rest of the battle group were correct, the isolating influence of the electrical tempest furthered that end. Risking a repeat accusation of data paranoia from Mondarus, the Magos connected to the surveyor systems and ran his own analysis as a redundant process. The data flow was painfully sporadic, utterly non-existent in some quadrants during particularly excessive storm discharges. Even the lamps of the other Titans had become almost invisible in the darkness, so that it seemed the casus belli advanced alone through a tunnel of blackness, lit only by the reflections of light from the curtain of hail. According to the archive logs, there were old settlements dug into the mountains on either side, storm-shielded to protect the inhabitants from just the kind of elemental rage that currently engulfed the valley. There was a significant probability that the enemy were using those subterranean dwellings at that moment, poised to attack when the storm's fury abated. A worrying track of logic drew Exasus into further extrapolation. If the heretics were ensconced within the mountains in any conflict-viable numbers, they might mount a problematic counterattack against the forces securing the remains of Az-Kallak. Devoid of the battlegroup's considerable firepower and yet to establish their own defensive positions, the Tech Guard were vulnerable to a rapidly launched assault. Exasus.
We have made a strategic error in separating from the Scutari echelon. We must halt and rectify the disparity.
Mondarus.
I calculate the current threat to the battlegroup as close to zero. Explain.
Exasus.
The threat is not to the God Engines, but to our Tech Guard. We have fallen foul of Haxifer's first principle.
Gevran.
That coordination of labor comes prior to division? What a curious analogy, to compare the majestic titans of the Legio to toil shifts of a manufactorum.
Haley.
Not curious, insulting.
Exasus.
The comparison remains. Haxifer posited that overseers risk inefficiencies by placing their requirements above those of the process they must guide. Though the axioms he created were derived from the production chambers of the forges, they have been attributed universality by the Metallican Council, and hence can be representative for all forms of endeavor.
Gevran.
Your meaning is still opaque, Zhao. Don't use complexity to affect false wisdom. Speak plainly.
Exasus.
As command officers of the battle group, and in particular the casus belli, we are comfortable creating a strategic paradigm with ourselves at the center.
Mondarus.
As the single most powerful element in the battle group, that is logical. Our performance is the greatest concern.
Exasus.
Though as a single entity we have the greatest impact, we are not greater than the sum of the remaining parts. This reasoning extends to the battle group. We consider the Titans in light of their mission and the Scutari as support to that.
Gevran.
Your bias is evident. Scutari are expendable. Titans are not. As Dominus, it must be hard for you to accept that. But you must. Even you, Magos Exasus, are secondary to the good of the Casus Belli.
Exasus.
Absolutely. And the Casus Belli is secondary to the good of the battle group. By extension, the battle group is expendable in the cause of the entire campaign, should it be necessary.
Maundarus.
That is debatable. Like Skitarii, new Astra Militarum resources can be raised. Not even 10 regiments require the effort to create that which has been invested in the Casus Belli.
Exasus.
From the outset, the raising of Imperial Guard regiments has not been an issue, but their deployment has. Though not irrelevant, that is secondary to my argument. In the matter of holding Az-Kallak, the roles are reversed. The battle group is not suited to the function of urban pacification and security.
Gavrin.
And that is exactly why the battle group moves on, Zhao. We cannot waste our time defending street corners against the remnants of the city's defenders.
Exasus.
But who would defend the Skitarii against overwhelming counterattack? Our role moved from primary to secondary at the instance of the city's capitulation. At every encounter thus far, the enemy has demonstrated a carefully staged defense. What if they engaged in a subterfuge that allowed them to feign greater strength within the city than actually existed, instead marshalling the forces we thought within Az-Kallak in the highlands? Having realized that they could not hold the city, the prudent course of action would be to evacuate such forces as they could for future use. And if in doing so they could convince their attackers that their strength was broken, they would pave the way for a potentially successful counteroffensive.
Iolona.
Do you have any alternative, Dominus?
The sudden emergence of the Princeps Senioris's presence surprised Exasus, as did her question. We sensed a flurry of Moderati Princeps traffic across the distorted Nuosphere. Although it was a direct contravention of Hierarchos, the pattern suggested that Gevrin and the other Moderati were exerting undue influence over their superior. If there was a moment for Exasus to reiterate this case, it was now. It was his duty to challenge the logic of the others, but with another Dominus on board, Exasus felt insecure in this position of command. We hesitated, keeping his fears to herself. Iolona.
There can be no retraction of our current orders, Dominus. We are in communications blackout with the battle group. We must press on to the rendezvous beyond the storm.
And with that pronouncement, all further discussion was thwarted. Against Exasus's grave misgivings, the Casus Belli would press on. An insistent signal through the static of the Nuosphere finally drew Exasus's attention. It was a latent communication from Olvatia that had been inserted during their first contact, time-coded to not make itself known immediately. Exasus treated the data packet with suspicion, just the latest in a series of increasingly unorthodox occurrences that had beset Ver and the Casus Belli since they had started their attack on Az-Kallak. There was a pattern to be discovered, V was sure of it. We could see the edges, the extant facts of the enemy's behavior, and the spiraled intertwining events that had brought the battle group to its current status. Yet no amount of examination revealed the hub that connected them. Exasus knew well enough that the center was not only the endpoint of the calculation, it was also the beginning. We knew that if he could decipher the meaning of the enemy's actions and properly extrapolate them to a defined outcome, there would be an evident counter to it. There were other, more disturbing factors to take into consideration. Facets of the Moderati's behavior, perhaps even Maundarus's, that raised more questions. The arrival of the other Magos Dominus possibly implicated some sort of politicking at the Legio command level. It was not unusual, though less common within the Legio than the wider cult Metallica. The demands of Hierarchos and the ambitions of individual magi meant factionalization was inevitable. In some social models, it was even deemed desirable, though as a strict militarist, Exasus viewed dissent and internal competition as inefficient compared to cooperation against external threat. Although it had probably held back this progression into the higher ranks, Exasus had previously remained explicitly neutral in such affairs.
A power struggle within the upper echelons of the Legio Metallica would explain some of the idiosyncrasies of their current deployment, but the Magos Dominus was determined not to be drawn into it on account of it being a distraction from completing this theorem. The time capsule attracted his attention again, with increased vitality. Still unsure, Exarsus created a sub-persona to engage with the message, shielding the greater part of herself from contact. Sub-Exarsus accessed the data stub with the care and circumspection of a Sergitas trying to remove an unexploded bolt from a patient. Security of Casus Belli compromised. Immediate action necessary. Consultation required. Auditory exchange only. Main battery magazine. The message confirmed Exarsus's opinion that the crew of the Casus Belli were being subjected to an unseen manipulation at the cost of operational effectiveness. As an outsider, Olvatia had an ideal perspective to determine these irregularities, although the clandestine nature of her communication did not bode well for any ambition on her part to bring the issue to light with the rest of the command crew. It was reasonable to assume that she wished to pass on whatever information she had to Exarsus to avoid becoming embroiled herself, although her presence on the Imperata was already evidence that she was unwittingly involved. Even so, the promise of further data on the subject was sufficient to temper Exarsus's suspicions. He registered his desire to depart the command module. Though he needed no justification to do so, he felt the need to provide an excuse. The lie came with shocking ease. Exarsus.
I must attend to the deployment of my troops around the main battery to ensure no repeat of the renegade space marine insertion is possible.
None of the others responded, so Exarsus disconnected the physical links to his station and departed without further comment. The corridor filled with noise and brightness as Delta VI Terra opened fire. Burning rounds from the phosphor blasters hammered into the hyperesia, setting fire to clothes and flesh with intense bursts of whiteness. Their screams were drowned out by the din as the battle construct salvo continued, round after round, tearing apart the hapless servants of the machine god. All bar one of them collapsed straight away, riddled with burning holes where white flickers of flame still danced. That one survived, to flail down the corridor, clothes ablaze, his screams pitched higher than any sound Gelser had imagined a human could make. The hiss of still-burning projectiles sounded disproportionately loud in the quiet that followed. Fat sputtered amid steaming vapors, accompanied by the thud of a twitching boot or slap of a hand spasm. The stench of charred flesh mixed with the already noxious odor of the Skitari bodies, and in combination, it was too much for Gelser. She staggered to the wall and vomited, her legs weak beneath her. She trembled, only the exoskeleton keeping her upright as she retched again, her bile acrid with incense aftertaste.
Hugh!
She took a breath and leaned her head against the wall. The pressure against her brow cog helped cut through the fog of her thoughts.
You could have warned them!
Anger flared. She whirled on Harkus, multi-tool raised. He shook his head, his eyes widening, and it was only as Delta VI Terra started to turn towards her that she realized her mistake. She let the metal fall from her fingers to clang to the floor, stepping back with her hands over her head so that she presented no threat. She stood like that for several seconds, fixing Harkus with a venomous glare. The click of servitor tracks drew her eye back to the incineratorum. They labored without interruption, dragging away bodies. One of them raised its head, saw the freshly slain hyperesia, and cruised down the passageway towards them, claw arms outstretched.
You should have warned them, she said again. They would have had to let us go.
Or summoned a Magos or officer with the authority to revoke our faith status.
He frowned.
This was your intention, not mine. I wanted to escape.
He glanced at the warbot and evidently decided against finishing the sentence.
Mission parameters incoherent.
The monotone statement took them both by surprise, halting any further argument. Delta VI Terra seemed locked in a quandary, pivoting towards Harkus and Gelser, and then turning back towards the atrium.
Incompatible determinations.
You were commanded to deliver us to the Hyperesia, said Harkus. He stepped over the burnt corpses and retrieved the two las pistols. He offered one to Gelsa, but she declined with a shake of her head.
You have achieved your mission.
The automaton pointed a blaster at the smoking remains.
Hyperesia are non-functional. Mission parameter incoherent.
Your mission is to protect us, Gelsa said quickly, realizing the potential of having a Castellan bodyguard.
Mission is to protect all faithful.
Delta VI Terra straightened, arms at its side, and ceased its oscillations.
Destroy, secure, protect. I will seek parameter clarification from Datasmith Undra.
The construct stomped along the passage back towards the atrium. Harkus put a finger to his lips to quieten Gelsa as she opened her mouth to call after it. A slight shake of his head silenced her protest of his dismissive gesture. When the machine had turned the corner into the connecting passageway, the Inquisitor let out a long sigh.
It is better for us that he doesn't think we are still in custody, he explained. At least we will not get shot for taking a wrong turn that it interprets as us trying to escape.
Harkus returned to the bodies and pulled his sigil from the Hyperesia leader's grip, breaking off a charred finger as he did so. He held it up, his expression similar to Notas's when he had not seen Gelsa in too long. Thoughts of her fellow tributi spurred a sudden sickness in Gelsa. Though only a few hours had passed since she had first seen the Inquisitor, it felt as though she had been away from her people for an age.
Go, she said, retrieving her multi-tool.
Harkus looked at her, contemplative, and hung the chain around his neck.
Go, he said. What do you mean?
Gelsa pointed at the inquisitorial badge.
You can complete your mission now.
She turned her stare back to the corpses of the Hyperesia.
I'm done with this murder,